I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running. Today on the fourth episode of Two Women Running Their Mouths, we are going to be switching gears a little bit to talk more about training. Both Ellie and I are run coaches as well as physical therapists. And so today we're specifically going to talk about heart rate training.
Oh yes. Good old heart rate training and all the joys and tribulations, I don't know if that's the right word to use, that come with it.
Yes. So Ellie, when did you start, or when were you introduced to heart rate training? Because, well, I guess what is it, first of all?
So heart rate training is basically using your heart rate to dictate your intensity to help improve your performance and sort of be able to grade your intensity in a workout, I guess you could say, or in a run. Anything to add to that? That's a very simplified way of describing it.
No, I think it is pretty simple. So
yeah, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you can't cheat physiology. And that's, like, I think a really critical piece to heart rate training is that it is one of the truest forms physiologically to determine your intensity. And you can't cheat it. It is what it is. If your heart rate is high, your training is high, hard. And I think that comes with a lot of stuff to unpack, which is something that Steph and I are going to chat about today, because heart rate training is a little bit frustrating when you first get started using it. I would say more than a little bit, a lot of bit frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah. When did you start using heart rate training yourself in your training, Steph?
I didn't start using it until I started working with a coach, Renee Hodges, after I had a labral tear in my left hip. So before that, it was pretty much all pace based, and that, so, you know, there's a couple different ways you could use heart rate. You can use pace, you can use rate of perceived exertion, and, rate of perceived exertion can vary obviously from day to day, and can be a little bit off depending on your history. I started using it because what I thought I was running easy, when I compared that to heart rate, I was actually not running easy, because it was based on I would correlate it with paces as well, and it was based on past performance. So I think that's where a lot of people can get a little bit, can be overtrained, because they're used to running a certain pace, thinking that it's a certain effort, and then when we do come back to the physiology, they're actually working a lot harder than they believed that they were.
Yes, I see this all the time. It's called intensity blindness. And I'm not the one who coined that term. I'm pretty sure Matt Fitzgerald coined that term. but it's basically what you're describing, Steph, which is, like, you think you're running at a particular easy pace and effort, but your heart rate is telling a different story. And it's all too easy as a runner to ignore the heart rate and say, well, I feel like I'm running easy. I'm definitely running easy. I just, quote, have a high heart rate. And this is where runners can run into trouble, quite literally. And I think that it's a big opportunity for folks to be able to separate any meaning from their pace and what their heart rate actually is, to really improve their training experience and potentially have great improvement to their performance as well.
So why do you think, and did you, I think we skipped over how you got into it, but why do you think a lot of people end up running more in this, like, moderate intensity range that's actually not an easy run pace?
That is a great question. I don't know if I know why, except that I think that people like to see certain paces happen when they're out on a run. And you can hit pretty, like, I think most people can hit a pretty, what they would consider a comfortable pace in that middle range, what we consider zone three, without being too overly fatigued all the time. So I think that it's just, like, where people tend to settle in. And where their like normal pace tends to be. They just don't know what it feels like to actually run slow. And so I think they just settle into this pace where you're just running. And in part, they want it to feel like a workout. I'm going to use air quotes there too, a workout, and work up a sweat and, you know, finish feeling as though it was hard to an extent. And then you feel like you got something accomplished, which is just kind of not necessary for improvements in performance, for maintaining consistency, for, you know, great performances in races. And so I don't know if I know exactly why, but I think those are some of the reasons. Our ego gets in the way. We think we have to, you know, run hard in order for it to be effective. And, you know, we think I have to be running below a 9-minute pace or I'm a slow old fart. And I just think there's a lot to unpack there.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Not only, I think you mentioned, you know, it's not going to help performance. It can definitely be detrimental too.
100%.
I think that's probably infiltrating all workout culture to an extent. This 100%. Idea, you have to be sore. You have to be, you know, breathing super hard in every workout to be most effective, which just isn't
the most fit.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Just like, you know, it's just like our culture is like, go, 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 get to be the fittest, be the fastest, work out the most. And in the endurance world, that it is very detrimental in the long term. So, and maybe even in the short term too. You know, I think for me, something that has really drastically made a huge improvement on my consistency is slowing down and using heart rate to slow down, because it has made a run that's supposed to be slow not so overwhelming, not so like, oh, this is going to be exhausting. It's like, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm going to go out. I'm going to chit chat. I'm going to like
look at the scenery.
Yeah. And hardly work up a sweat.
Yeah. May not have to shower after this time. I could delay my shower.
Yes. Delay it till tomorrow.
Yes. But you're right. And I've noticed that in a lot of athletes that I work with too, it's hard at first. They're like, oh, this is so challenging to run this slow. And the issue that they were having was that they'd run for a few months and then feel burnt out. And that issue doesn't happen because you're enjoying the runs. Your body is able to tolerate that load a lot better. And you're not getting to this awkward point of like, I'm not getting that much faster, but I'm not feeling recovered.
Right. Yeah. How long have you been using heart rate training, and what are some of the things that you still struggle with in using it?
I guess so. It's been total. What year was that? Probably almost a year and a half. But with some of that time not running from a stress fracture. Even the past time that I used it before the stress fracture, if I'm honest with myself, I think I was always still pushing up against that barrier. And, you know, you set these, so how I've done it or how we've done it with my coach is setting kind of these quote limits, kind of heart rate limits on most of my easy runs. And I would still kind of be like, I'm just going to nudge up against it and run right at that level. I'm going to run as fast as possible while keeping it right below. Like it's 150. Yeah. I'm going to stay at 149. If it creeps up to 152, whatever. so I wasn't super strict with it because I still had, like you said, a lot of stuff to unpack there with my ego, with my pace, because you can still see your pace while you're running and when you're done. And I get frustrated if there was a certain day where my pace was slower than other days or my heart rate was higher at a slower pace. So now coming back again, I've even set the limit a little bit lower so that if I go over it, I'm still below my actual upper limit. A limit below the limit, to help me mentally and just really let go of what that means, because that's really like, if it didn't mean anything to me to run at a certain pace or keep a 140 beats per minute heart rate, it'd be easy. But the reason it's challenging is because in my head, that means that I'm slow.
Right.
That's just not, those two things don't actually correlate.
Right. Yeah. And for folks who don't know what, how would you tell somebody, like, what are heart rate zones? What are they? I don't think we need to talk about percentages maybe, but like, what are they and what zones should people be focusing in on? And what zone are we talking about that you were butting up against?
So, the effect of a certain amount of effort on your heart's basically contraction and then the rest of your physiology. I don't know how to not get too in the weeds with it, but basically when your heart rate reaches certain intensity levels, there's a different effect on your ability to recover. And so what we're talking about is staying in these lower zones where you're actually getting a lot of aerobic benefit, where your heart's getting more efficient at pumping blood and oxygen to your working muscle, but we're not stimulating significant fitness gains or aerobic power and its ability to contract harder. We're staying in these zones where it's going to be more efficient, but it can also recover really quickly.
Right. Yes. That's a great way of putting it. You went further than I even expected. I was like thinking there's five zones. Depending on the scale you look, there's like some that are three, some that are five, some that are seven. Mm-hmm. Well, you can get a little in the weeds there, but to simplify it, let's say there's five zones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Zone three is the zone that Stefan and I are sort of talking about that people like to settle in and just run at zone three. And where we want to be prioritizing our runs are zones one and two, where, as Steph describes, we get more efficient at using the oxygen that we take in, I guess you could say. I feel like if I go down physiology, I could get really lost in the weeds and say a lot of wrong things. So we want to target, you know, generally speaking, about 80% of our runs in zone one and zone two. If you look at your runs during the week and your heart rate is typically in zone three, and, you know, that's to measure that, that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, just if we're using age predicted zones, you can look those up online. Zone three is where you're typically landing. Steph and I are saying that probably what you need to be doing is learning how to slow down a little bit more, learning how to control that effort. And that's going to challenge, as Steph has already spoken to, your bias on your fitness and your speed and your, you know, enoughness in this sport. But as I mentioned earlier on in the conversation, you can't cheat physiology. It does not lie. Occasionally, technology itself does lie, yes. But more often than not, you can't cheat it. So,
have you had any issues with staying in zone two or doing heart rate training? What's been your experience with that?
Yeah, you know, when you first get started, it's a pain in the ass. Like, it's just like, wow, I can't even run at this speed. Like, this feels like it's slow for me. I can't do that, or I'm not supposed to. What does that mean about me and, you know, my fitness? So initially, it's just challenges, all sorts of egotistical biases and worthiness biases. That take a long time to unpack. But then once you start being like, okay, you know, you kind of inch it back a little bit more all the time and get frustrated and like, oh, I just don't want to do it. I've been working at it for about a year, I would say, consistently using it. And now, a year into it, I look forward to those runs. And I don't attach as much meaning because I've had experiences along the way that show me that I'm still actually technically fast for what I perceive should be my level of fastness. during like time trials that I performed this year or virtual race that we did, you know, I spend probably the majority of my runs running a 10:30 to an 11:30 pace on those zone one and two runs. And that to me is like basically walking. It's not walking for me, but it feels like it should be. And I can still perform a 30-minute time trial in an 8:30 pace. And I think what that shows to me is like, I don't even have to train hardly ever to still be able to run fast when it matters and when it counts, for me. So for me, it's just been getting comfortable with running slow, knowing that's part of the endurance training process. And that for me, it's about establishing that consistency. This is the first year probably in my adult life that I've been as consistent with running as I have been. And I think I attribute a lot of that to slowing down, using heart rate training, walking more, and just getting comfortable with the fact that, you know, the process is going to take me where I want to go.
Definitely. Yeah. And have you seen over the time doing that with consistency, have you seen your paces change? Do you notice any change in your aerobic efficiency, or is that hard to see?
You know, what I notice is that I can actually run in zone 2 now. So before, when I first started, it was like I'd get running at a slow pace, you know, the same pace that I've been running at, 10:30 to 11:30, and my heart rate would jump up into zone 3. And that's zone 3 or sometimes even zone 4, and that's where I'd get frustrated. So I'd have to walk and like pout while I'm walking, like, oh, I'm so slow. And so I would make up these narratives, I'm so lazy. And now I can actually implement a run perfectly, zone 1 and zone 2, and don't have to walk. Mm-hmm. And that's like, even though I don't feel like I'm running faster, I am clearly more efficient, mm-hmm. without question more efficient, because I can maintain it. You know, and the way that I describe running slow too, you ever watch those boxing movies, like, you know, the boxers like jogging, doing shadow boxing or whatever, like that's how slow you want it to be. Like where you're just like trotting along, feeling like you could throw some punches. And I think that it takes practice. And that's what I try to help runners realize. It's like, this is, you know, high intensity and speed stuff, that takes practice. But slowing down probably takes even more practice because of the challenges to, you know, your ego, to your sense of self, to your identity, to your concept of your own fitness. And the reality is it might be considered meaningful, but it's also almost meaningless. You just need to slow down so that you can run fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. It really is. We create meaning out of something that is meaningless, for sure.
Right.
So coming back to high intensity, when you do sprinkle that in, sometimes you do run fast. Do you use heart rate for that?
Not as much. No. I would say that's the case for most of my runners. I'm using heart rate to really try and show them when to slow down. And I tend to use pace a little bit more in the high intensity ranges, and RPE a little bit more in those high intensity ranges. But it kind of depends. Like you get to zone 3, I want to know what somebody's heart rate is after they've, you know, if they're like in zone 3, I want to know that. In their non-intense workouts, their low intensity. But sometimes too, for like tempo work, you want to know, like, are they hitting the right, you know, are they like zone 5 trying to tempo zone 5?
Yeah.
So sort of, but I would say for the most part, when it comes to high intensity stuff, I'm less concerned about that, because you're, you know, so quick. And, you know, depending on your intervals that you're doing, you know, you might be done with an interval and your watch hasn't quite caught up to where it's supposed to be. So I'm more inclined to go by pace and RPE. What about you?
Yeah, I would speak exactly the same to that. I think you made a good point with the tempo, the moderate intensity stuff, because it can be really easy to jump up into high intensities with that and be trying to run as hard as possible for longer, you know, 15, 20 yeah. minute intervals, when really the goal is to stay in that certain range again. So
yes.
I think knowing it or reflecting back on it and comparing that to once they reflect on their effort or rate of perceived exertion and kind of correlating all of those things can be really important. But for the shorter intervals, I agree. It's just with the cardiac lag. So basically your heart rate there'll be a little bit of a lag when your heart rate increases at certain intensity levels. So I would agree with that too, where you just use effort or pace for the short ones.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's a little bit playing it by ear a little bit too, and what works for somebody. I think that heart rate helps to anchor you in those slow zones, which are just so critical to your success, to reducing injury risk, to improving your performance, and to just maintaining your fitness over time. So heart rate is just so valuable in those low zones. And it's a great time to practice. You're going out for an easy run. There's no stress on that. There shouldn't be this sense of like, oh, I have urgency on an easy run. It needs to be easy. And you just have to get comfortable with the fact that it's going to take practice to slow down. For me, it really feels like I'm like pulling in the reins the entire time, which I think is just counterintuitive. And lots of people say, you know, what would you say to somebody who's like, I can't even be running and be in zone one or two?
Yeah, I don't think that's possible. Or wait, you mean they have to walk?
Yeah, they can't be at a running pace and be in zone one and two.
Okay, sorry, I was thinking the opposite, where they're like, they were saying that even if they're slowly jogging, they're not getting up into zone one. So, no, if you aren't able to stay in zone one or two when you're jogging, then let's fast walk. We can do
bingo
walking, we can do, but it's the most similar activity with the joint forces and just, you know, mimicking running, then we're going to do a fast walk or a walk run, like right. You started with.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, in Seattle, there's a lot of hills. So, and I can't be running up a hill and be in zone one or two. Doesn't matter how slow I'm going. I cannot stay in those zones. So, you know, I'll tell people walk the hills, like walk the hills, just be okay with it. And work that practice and that repetition. And before you know it, soon you'll be running them and potentially using those hills as an opportunity for more fitness. Mm-hmm. But you can't really do a lot of that if you're spending the majority of your workouts at zone three and above. Right. Like there's just no room for any fun. anymore when you're doing workouts every single time and your heart rate is above your zone three. So
absolutely. And then on the other thing, what I kind of misinterpreted though was for people who are like, well, if I run that slow, there's going to be no benefit. You know, if I'm jogging and I'm just way down in zone one, and that's not necessarily true either from the numbers. If we do get into percentages, I think it's about 60% of heart rate max and above is going to get you heart health benefits basically. And so for me as a 30-year-old, that's around 112 beats per minute. So I could be doing a fast, hilly walk, hiking, anything like that, and it will be aerobically beneficial. So that's not an excuse either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, where we make our benefit, our like gains in running is when we run slow. That's like where our body physiologically adapts to the workload. And also to an extent recovers from that workload. And I think, you know, that balance is always tough to figure out perfectly and get right. But if you're able to slow down more often, I just think you really don't even realize the potential benefits you can achieve by doing that. So, and I still feel like I have so much to learn as a runner, really trying to implement it. You know, it's a big learning curve for me, but it's been one of the most beneficial on my performance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just know that this takes time to
see
improvement in different ways. As you said, Ellie, now you don't have to stop and walk. And so you know that your efficiency is improving. And for me, it was like, well, my pace isn't coming down, but instead of 30 minutes at a time now, I'm holding this for 60 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, over two or three months that you'll see those changes.
One of my biggest like ahas was running in Illinois with wind gusts of 50 miles per hour. And I just like, I hit a zone two run, like no big deal. And I was just so impressed with myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's flat here, so that's a benefit, but the wind was going, and, you know, I think logically we understand that there are certain things that are going to slow our pace down. Like wind will slow our pace down. Snow will likely slow our pace down. And illogically, we don't realize that things like sleep and cumulative fatigue and day-to-day stress should also be indicators to us that we could benefit from slowing things down. But we know that these other sort of external variables should slow us down. And the internal ones should be slowing us down too. And so I think the work of a coach and as a physical therapist is really teaching people the value they can get by doing that and continue to practice those things and to realize, like, okay, pace isn't everything. Pace is important to people who want to race. It's important to runners. It's important to me even. But in training, you have to embrace the repetition, the just willingness to show up, the consistency, the sort of monotony of it, to really start to, like, I'm going to say, embrace like this really positive, enriching experience with running. That's a bias that I have. The joy of running isn't slowing down.
Nope, I would completely agree with that. I couldn't have said it better. Embracing the monotony. It's not always going to be exciting. It's most of the time it's not, and that's
just
part of the process. And
exactly
enjoying that. And like you said, I used to get anxious about some of my runs. Like, yeah. I know this isn't going to feel that good, even though it's not a super hard workout. And when you can just slow down, you can look at more, you can, you know, just, you can talk, you can have more social runs, really enjoy the beauty of being able to move your body in that way.
Right. Right. And if you're somebody who really struggles with injury, what would you say would be the benefit of doing heart rate based training?
I think it can definitely reduce your risk of injury. As someone who has not embraced it until later and has had many injuries, I've talked to many females who have been injury free, and they pretty much have a similar training philosophy. They run slow most of the time, and that shouldn't be mind blowing, but those are the women that have more longevity in the sport, and they, you know, you can just tell when you talk to them that it's about they're, you know, they want fast race times, but they just love to run.
Yeah.
And slowing down and that consistency leads to performance improvements over time. And when you're running too fast and you're not recovered, even though it feels like it's not that fast, it's that moderate intensity, you don't realize that your body's never recovering. And you go in this cycle of injury, or performance plateau, or both, over and over. And then that lack of consistency, unfortunately, it doesn't set you up well for later years.
Right. Yeah. That's very, very well said. Yeah. So.
Run slower.
Yeah. Moral of the story is practice slower running. Mm-hmm. Consider using heart rate-based training methods as a mix in your training. There's a lot of different ways to dictate intensity. Heart rate is probably the most honest, physiologically speaking. So consider adding that in. RPE is the other way, and then pace is the other way. So there's a lot of different ways. Consider getting a coach. You know, I know Steph has coaching open spots right now. So if you need a coach, we both coach, and we can help work through that difficult process.
Yeah, when someone else is giving you instructions and checking in on your workouts, it does help keep you accountable. I do think it's important to have that accountability when no one else is watching too. But it's just a really good way to start making and learning better training decisions.
Right, exactly. Making sensible choices through your training experiences. Yeah. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to reach out to us via email. I will post our emails in the show notes. And our contact information. Is there anything else you want to add, Steph?
I don't think so. Thanks again for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And if anyone wants to sponsor, send an email. We're open to that as well.
Yeah. Yes, we are. And I think that's it. Everyone, have a good one. Thanks for listening.